So that's just the end to our main episode, the bonus stuff we just...
We usually just chat.
Butterfly in the sky.
Whatever we were wanting to talk about in a tangent in the rest of the episode, but didn't want to flood.
We went off on a bit of a tangent the other day.
We did.
Apologies if I swear too much during the actual podcast. I sometimes forget.
Oh, no, we do that.
I do the same thing.
I can't help it. It's part of my culture.
Yeah.
It's hard not to swear when you're reading.
Oh, I know.
I'm just happy I didn't drop the C-bomb.
That must have been very difficult.
That's okay.
Why, so like... Americans can have a struggle session with you about it?
Yeah, exactly. Because here, it's a term of endearment here, and I refuse to accept any other perspective.
I think that's fair, actually. And as, like, somebody who has recently recorded an episode about crassness and leftism, I have literally no issues with the C-bomb. But also, we swear on this pod anyway.
Yeah, we do.
If we didn't swear, it was an accident today.
Yeah, yeah, we'll be better next time.
We'll edit some in.
I have an issue with it from sort of a feminist perspective when it's used against women, that, nah, everyone's a cunt.
Yeah. Here in the US, it's mostly just a derogatory term against women.
Yeah, no, I'd say it's only ever used contextually against women in an American context.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, like, I know it's, like, like something that, like, you might call your mates or one of your buddies, like, it's pretty casual in other places, but in America, pretty much the only time you will ever hear that word being used is when it's being basically weaponized against a woman in a very vulgar way. So, like, I'm one of those people who, like, I grew up in a British family, so, like, I'm a first-generation American from British immigrants, so, like, I get it, but... I also get why American people don't get it.
Yep. Yeah, we're not there yet.
It's used incredibly differently.
Yeah, Australia is a country where getting called a funny cunt is a compliment.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I have some friends in Europe, Australia, and they both seem to have reinforced the idea that there is a way to use it as an insult, but for the most part, it's like taking a stab at your friend.
That's a national Australian pastime, is taking the piss out of your mates, so.
Which also in the US means something completely different.
I'm gonna loudly eat a candy bar. Let me hear.
I've been eating this whole time.
What are you eating?
A Snickers.
Classic candy bar.
A Snickers? Why wait?
Also in America, did they market Snickers like in a very like toxic masculinity type way?
We have that here, yeah.
Yeah, in the UK it was like, not, was it? No, sorry, maybe I'm thinking of Yorkie. Well, I mean, they both did it, but in a separate way. Do you have Yorkies? We had Yorkie bars, which were not for girls. And it had like...
He's British to the core.
Okay, yeah, it had Yorkies, and then, like, you know the bathroom sign for a woman? It had that, but, like, with the red circle and a cross through. And it was, like, not for girls.
Jeez. So a lot of things are marketed that way. I just bought a razor, and, like, if I wanted to buy a razor that was, like, I don't know, worth a damn, I had to spend $3 less and get a men's razor.
Oh, yeah, that's wild how, like, they'll make products for men versus women, and they'll be identically the same, but the one with the women's whatever gender coded color label they had on it costs like almost twice as much every time.
Pink tax.
It's crazy. Like, it'll be the same scented shampoo. There'll be a men's version and a women's version. Men's version costs like $3 more. It's fucking nuts.
Old Spice has a scent right now that's just lavender, but they call it like lavender or something.
Every time I watch YouTube, I get commercials for that guy who I think he makes soap. I I can never get myself through them because it's literally like Manly Soap Company. Do you know where you get your soap from? Like just some, you know, bearded want to be looking like a lumberjack guy trying to tell you that you need to buy men's soap and that your old soap wasn't manly enough.
Soap for bros.
Yeah, no, it's literally dude soap. Yeah. Right, come get some bro soap.
Make soap more manly. Like, does it contain semen, or what's the active ingredient?
I don't know. If it's the only way you can get these weird looking dudes to wash themselves.
Right. That's exactly it. You're not allowed to wash yourself if your soap doesn't say something about like forest springs or like woodland axe swinging or like the musk of sweat after a construction workday.
Made out of whiskey barrels.
Man, if you're listening, wash yourself more.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't matter if it has the wrong color label or if it looks like it's advertised to the wrong gender. Soap is always good and you should always use it. Wash your ass, folks.
Yourself. Don't let toxic masculinity leave you with bacteria-ridden body.
There's an artist in the UK called Darren Cullen, and one of the things he sells is like stickers which you put on products which aren't for men, which make them for men. Like, obviously, oh, as a joke. No, as a joke.
Okay. So it's like a statement.
Yeah. It's like engineered by men for men. Man thing for men. Definitely for men. For men who are men.
That's funny.
If a woman touches it, it will dissolve.
Yeah.
Is it just exclusively like embittered boomer men buying these products or what? Like, I don't understand anyone being.
It's like you're all left, like hyper masculine. Yeah, right. Like the incel alt right. Conservatives are like all about this like ridiculous display of masculinity. So it's not just boomers.
No. Gen Xers. I feel like it's a lot about, I think it has a lot to do with the kind of people that your country produces when you're in a never-ending state of war and you kind of are constantly trying to... No, I think it absolutely is that it's like this hyper-masculinity. It's like, it's kind of like how, like everybody's like, yeah, over the 2 years since we became fascist, everything surprised me. It's like, no, we've been fascist for a long fucking time. And like, we've established a culture of that like you're saying, it's like boomer minded dudes, but yeah, they're like 29 years old. They're 32 years old. They're guys whose friends went to Afghanistan or they went to Afghanistan, and they're built around this whole culture of ultra masculinity that really came up heavy from like, you know, 2001 to 2015,
13. Right. Post 9/11 nationalist residual, like hyper masculine.
Non-American, it's very bizarre. Like Australia is a hyper masculine society as well, but.
I feel like the effect of the war has had a, like, I don't know, maybe playing that, but I feel like that was pretty contingent on the way they've built kind of the ability for there to ever be a kind of neoliberal as brash and vulgar as Donald Trump. Like, that was, would never have been possible without, you know, many, many years of cultural indoctrination and normalization of violence that sustains our everyday.
Right. Right, like, I think the people that are mostly subscribing to this level of, like, hyper-masculinity that aren't boomers are mostly my age, and they were people that were raised, like, that were children and really hyper-influenceable around the time that, like, we were really pounded with this nationalist propaganda after 9/11 and during this, like, whatever you would call it, the war on terror that we were in afterwards, where we just went in and assaulted several innocent people in the Middle East. How's
that war going?
It's just, what's that?
Still going. It's all I know.
I know.
Oh, yeah, you didn't destroy terror yet.
But that started, the justification started when I was a child and when I was like in middle school. And I think most of the people that are really part of that culture right now that are reinforcing that are about my age and have just been steeped in this propaganda for our entire like adolescent and adult life. So, like, yeah. I think that it's just proof that the propaganda around this was so strong that you have people that are out there, like, still echoing the racist sentiments and, like, nationalist that you were hearing right after this, like, horrible life event. It's just, it's very frustrating to see, because I feel like I watched, like, I was in the hotbed of the target audience for that problem.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Jess, can I ask what your age is, just for clarification?
I will be 33 this
month. Yep. 26, all right?
Yep. Oh, yeah, your birthday is like the day before mine, right?
Yep, 25th. I'll be 29.
Nice.
What, this month?
Yep.
Yep.
Nice.
Sorry, I actually dropped out. I dropped out during your answer.
That's okay. I'm 33. Or I will be in like 2 weeks.
Right. So yeah, we're about the same age then.
Yep. Yeah, just about. I think almost all of us are then, because I think Connor, you're a little younger than us, right?
Yeah, I'm 26.
Yeah.
He's the baby.
Still like roughly the same.
Pretty much.
But
right, I'm 31, which is like, yeah.
30s are the best though, by the way. Look forward to that.
Well, it can't be as shit as my 20s, so, you know.
I'm trying to quit before my birthday on the 25th of this month. That's my goal. I gotta quit smoking cigarettes.
Good. Because, like, you're gonna start noticing that you have more lungs than you thought you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of, like, Industrial Revolution cotton lung.
Yeah. I will not vape, though. I'm not gonna go that route. I will not be quitting by vaping.
Yeah, drawing the line there.
Yeah, I don't want to trade one strange lung disease for another.
Right, for one that you don't have decades of experience of what the effects are.
Get patches or get the Nicorette gum or something, because like nicotine addiction is pretty fucking
no
intense.
No joke.
So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've quit cold turkey twice before. It didn't stick, but like I've quit for 6 and 4 months respectively before. And I'm hoping this time it sticks.
Yeah, capitalist stressor came into your life and fucked you over, I'm betting.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm really excited to read Dialectical and Historical Materialism.
Me too.
There's so much to talk about, and I keep trying to not talk about it.
Are there any other resources? Like, are there any, like, I'm trying to think, is there any podcast that's done it already, or any other perspective we can get on it?
Have Fred Mendes done it, possibly?
No, I don't think they have. I don't think they've done
any
Stalin yet.
Like YouTubes or anything with it.
Breaking new ground.
Yeah, this is why it needs to be done then.
Most people just won't touch it just because they know what the backlash is going to be.
Yeah.
Mm.
This is actually the first time I've read Stalin.
Goddamn right.
Really excited about it. Like more than just speeches or at length of Stalin. It's like, it solidifies the idea that, you know, each of these revolutionaries, like theorists that added on to Marxist theory really like kind of just built on this, the theory, adding like a new level of application to it, like really explaining a dialectical and historical materialism from like, why this is the way that we evaluate things this way, and like why that's different from the way that other things have been evaluated, and where the flaw is in that. It's like, I think that was necessary after the additions that like Lenin had just added. So I'm more convinced of the idea that like Marx and then Lenin and then Stalin and then Mao and all of these people just continued to add on to the theory to make it more thorough application of.
Yeah, for me, reading Stalin for the first time was similar to how I felt recently reading Mao for the first time. I was just kind of taken aback quite a bit, and it really just helps completely destroy any previous image it has imposed on me about them.
And it definitely doesn't hurt that they're like super approachable, readable, understandable. Mm-hmm. Like like Lenin's a phenomenal writer, but I don't think there's something about the way Stalin writes is just so clear and concise. And it's very similar with Mao, how as you read it, it flows so naturally. The pace is right. Like, just they're good writers, and it makes them like they know how to humanize themselves through their writing.
Right. They're more talking to the individual as opposed to the masses, is what it feels like. Like, although, of course, they are talking to everybody, it's the way that they write is like talking to you as a person, how you need to be confronting these issues, as opposed to like Lenin is talking more like broadly.
Mm-hmm. It's like Lenin was writing for the vanguard, whereas Stalin was writing for, I mean, they already had a country in place. And so they were right. Speaking to the people within that country. Similar with Mao as well, I guess, though they were still building the revolution as well.
Right. Absolutely. And I mean, Stalin even mentions that in the writing, like how the way that we perceive things would have been different by now, given progress. It was just, it's interesting to see, I don't know, you can't possibly like read and understand dialectical materialism and not be so simple once you read it.
Yeah, well, because everybody online acts like it's a super complex thing to explain. And then when you have it laid out in front of you the way that, I mean, it, like we said, it's like in 42 pages. It's pretty quick, pretty clear, and very concise. I mean, when you're done, there's no mistake about what you just read.
Right. Chapter 15 of Capital was 3 times as long as Dialectical and Historical Materialism. And it was an entire concept that we like delved into and thoroughly like experienced and explored. And so, I mean, not to like say one thing is better than the other, but like these Marxist concepts are not hard to understand. What's hard to understand is economic theory. Like, that's hard. Like, that takes a lot of time to understand every facet of capitalism, which is what we're doing together. But Marxist theory is not hard. Like, telling people that things are the sum of all parts and not just individual things is not a hard concept.
No. And it's actually kind of revealing about the nature of Capital, the book itself, like what we're reading. Like, we are reading him approaching Capital from a dialectical method in which you try to view every aspect involved in it as this kind of symbiotic whole, rather than taking things individually and examining things on their own as had previously been done.
That's almost exclusively what Marx says when he's talking about other economic theorists and stuff. He's normally saying they're missing something. They're not looking at everything whole. Like, they're only pointing out this one function, but they're missing the gene. And that seems
they understood this, but they didn't understand that.
Right. And that's the entire distinction between Marxist economic perception and any other economic theory or way of thought, is that we think about it from the sum of all things, from the social aspect to the you know, like the machinery, to the way that the workers are operating, to the actual like trading of commodities and how those things work. Like, that's why Capital is so important, like you were just saying, is because we're studying the way that our economy works, the sum of all of it. And we need to do it together because we know now that cooperation makes us more.
Makes everything easier. But honestly, I don't know if I would make it through this whole book if it wasn't for you guys. So thank you so much. This has been awesome.
I was thinking
there's
that
no
today
way in
as
hell
well.
I would. I would have gotten, I mean, just like, this, even this if chapter, I was doing real good. Oh. Right. I would have got to 15 and been like, well, that was a good run.
Yeah. That was fun, but I'm done.
The fuck do you think I feel? I have to go back and start at the beginning now.
Oh, it's hard. I'd like to think that our discussions can help launch you into the, like, I don't know, sorting through it yourself, but I also don't know, because like I'm part of it.
If we can have helped like one person read Capital, I'm really happy with that.
Yeah, honestly. Because, like,
yeah.
This has primarily been to, like, help us as, like, members of this Discord. And, like, we've had a bunch of who jump in and out here. Like, it's been about helping us make sure that we understand it and get through it. And if, like, I can't go back and listen to the first episode from the perspective of somebody who's just figuring that out on their own, because I'm already past that point. So I can't examine it through the
right
perspective of somebody who's trying to go through it on their own. So I'd love that perspective. I hope it's helpful, but if not, I know it's helped me, and I know it's helped the people I'm reading it with. So either way, I'm good keeping on doing this.
Right. I was just saying in one of the channels recently that all of our various types of podcasts are basically like our Discord server's version of Home Movies, where we just record all the things we like to do together for posterity. Yep. And we can just access them in podcast form via the public.
Yeah. I like that. That's
basically what it is.
It's communist, like, hey, home videos.
We
just really
like reading together, and so we recorded it for y'all. I really want to do the movie thing.
Although, yeah, me too.
You know.
Yeah, I'd love to try and get a simulcast going somehow, but we'll figure it out.
Well, didn't Dana find a way?
I if anybody can do it, trust her. So.
Right. Same. Okay, y'all. Well, I gotta check out. It was nice talking to you this week.
Yeah, it was a fun session.
Yeah, I liked it. It's nice.
Yeah.
And next week's going to be exciting. 10 people have RSVP'd. So.
Oh, shit.
Hell yeah. So it's going to be a big crowd. I'll put something together that I can give to everybody midweek this week so that we can kind of have something to prepare ourselves around, so we're not all just kind of coming from it from 30 places at once.
Like we were for the first few episodes.
Thank you for joining us. That was Pearls of the Book Club. That was the end of chapter 15. And thank you to Keegan for the intro. Thank you to Craig for helping us record these sessions. Thank you to our parent podcast, Pearls of the Roundtable, without which we would not have met and would not be hosting this wonderful book club every week inside of their Discord server. If you'd like to join us, all you have to do is pitch in at least $1 towards the Pearls of the Roundtable, join the Discord server, and anybody can join every Sunday. Right now, we're covering Capital and some other readings as well. We'll be doing dialectical and historical materialism next week. Hopefully, that's the way that this gets released. And we also want to give a shout out to our other pod family, Pearls of the Mignon. That's it for now. It's the only. Oh wait, Pearls of the Game Table, which is a sub podcast with the Pearls of the Round Table, where they do an RPG, a tabletop RPG, and you can listen to them be hilarious and time. It is pretty great. And we also have Bands of Turtle Island has now released their. I don't know, second episode. There are a couple episodes in so far, and that is an Indigenous perspective on, and well, mostly a leftist Indigenous perspective on history and current events. And it's fantastic as well. Highly recommend them. Myself and Talia, we have a podcast inside the same network called The Tolerant Left, where we talk about events and issues with the community from a Marxist-Leninist perspective. And we also have our comrade Colette has released her podcast, Ad Vincere Mundi. Did I say that correct? Hopefully. And it's a classical history podcast from a Marxist-Leninist perspective. And so basically, pick your flavor. The grand old USSP has got a podcast for you. And we hope you join us next time. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.